work doing what? Dish here's a top hand. He don't cotton to work that requires walking, do you, Dish?
I don't for a fact, Dish said, looking at the captain but seeing Lorena. I've done a mess of it, though. What did you have in mind?
Well, we were going down to Mexico tonight, Call said. Going to see what we can raise. We might make up a herd ourselves if you wanted to wait a day or two while we look it over.
That mare's bites drove you crazy, Augusta said. Make up a herd and do what with it?
Drive it, Call said.
Well, we might drive it over to Pickle's Gap, I guess. That ain't enough work to keep a hand like Dish occupied for the summer.
Call got up and carried his dishes to the wash tub. Bolivar wearily got off the stool and picked up the water bucket. I wish Dietz had come back, he said. Dietz was a black man. He had been with Call and Augustus nearly as long as P.I. 3 days before, he had been sent to San Antonio with a deposit of money, a tactic Call always used since few bandits would suspect a black man of having any money on him. Bolivar missed him because one of Dietz's jobs was to carry water.
He'll be back this morning, Call said. You can set your clock by Dietz.
You might set yours. I wouldn't set mine. Old Dietz is human. If he ever run into the right dark-complexioned lady, you might have to wind your clock 2 or 3 times before he showed up. Well, he's like me. He knows that some things are more important than work.
Bolivar looked at the water bucket with irritation. I'd like to shoot this damn bucket full of holes, he said.
I don't think that you could hit that bucket if you was sitting on it, Augusta said. I've seen you shoot. You ain't the worst shot I ever knew. Well, that'd be Jack Janelle, but you run him a close race. Jack went broke as a buffalo hunter quicker than any man I ever knew. He couldn't have hit a buffalo if one had swallowed him.
Bolivar went out the door with the bucket, looking as if it might be a while before he came back. Dish, meanwhile, was doing some hard thinking. He had meant to leave right after breakfast and ride back to the Matagorda, where he had a sure job. The Hat Creek outfit was hardly known as a trail-driving bunch, but on the other hand, Captain Call was not a man to indulge in idle talk. If he was contemplating a cattle drive, he would probably make one. Meanwhile, there was Lorena, who might come to see him in an entirely different light if he could spend time with her for a few days running. Of course, getting to spend time with her was expensive, and he had not a cent. But if word got around that he was working for the Hat Creek outfit, he could probably attract a little credit. One thing Dish prided himself on was his skill at driving a buggy. It occurred to him that since Lorena seemed to spend most of her time cooped up in the dry bean, she might appreciate a buggy ride along the river in a smart buggy if such a creature could be found in Lonesome Dove. He got up and carried his plate to the wash bucket.
Captain, if you mean it, I'd be pleased to stay the day or two. Dish said.
The captain had stepped out on the back porch and was looking north, along the stage road that threaded its way through the brush country toward San Antonio. The road ran straight for a considerable distance before it hit the first gully, and Captain Call had his eyes fixed on it. He seemed not to hear Dish's reply, although he was only a few feet away. Dish stepped out on the porch to see what it was that distracted the man. Far up the road, he could see 2 horsemen coming, but they were so far yet that it was impossible to tell anything about them. At moments, heat waves from the road caused a quavering that made them seem like 1 horseman. Dish squinted, but there was nothing special about the riders that his eye could detect, yet the captain had not so much as turned his head since they appeared.
"Gus, come out here," the captain said.
Augustus was busy cleaning his plate of honey, a process that involved several more biscuits.
"I'm eating," he said, though that was obvious. "Come see who's coming," the captain said rather mildly, Dish thought. "If it's Dietz, my watch is already set," Augustus said. "Anyway, I don't suppose he's changed clothes, and if I have to see his old black knees sticking out of them old quilts he wears for pants, it's apt to spoil my digestion."
"Dietz is coming all right," Call said. "Fact is, he ain't by himself."
"Well, a man's always aimed to marry," Augustus said. "I imagine he finally met up with that dark-complexioned lady I was referring to."
"He ain't met no lady," Call said with a touch of exasperation.
who he's met is an old friend of ours. And if you don't come out here, I'll have to drag you. Augustus was about through with his biscuits anyway. He had to use a forefinger to capture the absolute last drop of honey, which was just as sweet licked off a finger as it was when eaten on good sourdough biscuits. "Newt, did you know that honey is the world's purest food?" he said, getting up. Newt had heard enough lectures on the subject to have already forgotten more than most people ever know about the properties of honey. He hurried his plate to the tub, more curious than Mr. Gus about who Dietz could have found. "Yes, sir, I like it myself," he said, to cut short the talk of honey. Augustus was a step behind the boy, idly licking his forefinger. He glanced up the road to see what Call could be so aroused about. Two riders were coming, the one on the left clearly Dietz on a big white gelding they called Wishbone. The other rider rode a pacing bay. It took but a moment for recognition to strike. The rider seemed to slump a little in the saddle in the direction of his horse's offside, a tendency peculiar to only one man they knew. Augustus was so startled that he had made the mistake of running his sticky fingers through his own hair. "I God, Woodrow," he said. "That there is Jake Spoon."
Chapter 6.
The name struck Newt like a blow. So much did Jake Spoon mean to him. As a very little boy, when his mother had still been alive, Jake Spoon was the man who came most often to see her. It began to be clear to him, as he turned over his memories, that his mother had been a whore like Lorena. But this realization tarnished nothing, least of all his memories of Jake Spoon. No man had been kinder either to him or his mother. Her name had been Maggie. Jake had given him hard candy and pennies and had set him on a pacing horse and given him his first ride. He had even had old Jesus, the bootmaker, make him his first pair of boots. And once when Jake won a lady's saddle in a card game, he gave the saddle to Newt and had the stirrups cut down to size. Those were the days before order came to Lonesome Dove, when Captain Call and Augustus were still rangers, with responsibilities that took them up and down the border. Jake Spoon was a ranger, too, and in Newt's eyes, the most dashing of them all. He always carried a pearl-handled pistol and rode a pacing horse. Easier on the seat, Jake claimed. The dangers of his profession seemed to sit lightly on him. But then the fighting gradually died down along the border, and the captain, Mr. Gus, and Jake, and P.I., and Dietz all quit rangering and formed the Hat Creek outfit. But the settled life seemed not to suit Jake. One day he was just gone. No one was surprised, though Newt's mother was so upset by it for a time, he got a whipping every time he asked when Jake was coming back. The whippings didn't seem to have much to do with him, just with his mother's disappointment that Jake had left. Newt stopped asking about Jake, but he didn't stop remembering him. It was barely a year later that his mother died of fever, and the captain, Augustus, took him in. Although at first they argued about him. First, Newt missed his mother so much that he didn't care about the arguments. His mother and Jake were both gone, and arguments were not going to bring him back. But when the worst pain passed, and he began to earn his keep around the Hat Creek outfit by doing the numerous chores that the captain had set him, he often drifted back in his mind to the days when Jake Spoon had come to see his mother. It seemed to him that Jake might even be his father. Though everyone told him his name was Newt Dobbs, not Newt Spoon. Why it was Dobbs, and why everyone was so sure, was a puzzle to him, since no one in Lonesome Dove seemed to know anything about a Mr. Dobbs. It had not occurred to him to ask his mother while she was alive. Last names weren't used much around Lonesome Dove, and he didn't realize that the last name was supposed to come from the father. Even Mr. Gus, who would talk about anything, seemed to have no information about Mr. Dobbs. "He went west when he shouldn't have," was his only comment on the man. Newt had never asked Captain Call to amplify that information. The captain preferred to volunteer what he wanted you to know. In his heart, though, Newt didn't believe in Mr. Dobbs. He had a little pile of stuff his mother had left, just a few beads and combs and a little scrapbook and some cut-out pictures from magazines that Mr. Gus had been kind enough to save for him. And there was nothing about a Mr. Dobbs in the scrapbook and no picture of him amid the pictures.
though there was a scratchy picture of his grandfather, Maggie's father, who had lived in Alabama. If, as he suspected, there had been no Mr. Dobbs, or if he had just been a gentleman who stopped at the rooming house a day or two, they had lived in the rooming house when Maggie was alive, then it might be that Jake Spoon was really his father. Perhaps no one had informed him of it because they thought it more polite to let Jake do so himself when he came back. Newt had always assumed Jake would come back, too. Scraps of news about him had blown back down the cow trails. Word that he was a peace officer in Ogallala, or that he was prospecting for gold in the Black Hills. Newt had no idea where the Black Hills were, or how he went about finding gold in them, but one of the reasons he was eager to head north with a cow herd was the hope of running into Jake somewhere along the way. Of course, he wanted to wear a gun and become a top hand and have the adventure of the drive. Maybe they would even see a buffalo, though he knew there weren't many left. But underneath all his other hopes was the oldest yearning he had, one that could lie covered over for months and years and still be fresh as a toothache, the need to see Jake Spoon. Now the very man was riding toward them, right there beside Dietz on a pacing horse as pretty as the one he had ridden away 10 years before. Newt forgot Dish Boget, whose every move he had been planning to study. Before the two riders even got very close, Newt could see Dietz's big white teeth shining in his black face, for he'd gone away on a routine job and was coming back proud of more than having done it. He didn't race his horse up to the porch or do anything silly, but it was plain, even at a distance, that Dietz was a happy man. Then the horses were kicking up little puffs of dust in the wagon yard, and the two were almost there. Jake wore a brown vest and a brown hat. He still had his pearl-handled pistol. Dietz was still grinning. They rode right up to the back porch before they drew rein. It was obvious that Jake had come a long way, for the pacing bay had no flesh on him. Jake's eyes were the color of coffee, and he wore a little mustache. He looked them all over for a moment and then broke out in a slow grin. "Howdy, boys," he said. "What's for breakfast?" "Why, biscuits and fatback, Jake," Augustus said. "The usual fare, only we won't be serving it up for about 24 hours. I hope you got a buffalo liver or a haunch of venison on you to tide you over." "Gus, don't tell me that you vet," Jake said, swinging off the bay. "We rode all night, and Dietz couldn't think of nothing to talk about except the taste of them biscuits you make." "While you was talking, Gus was eating them," Call said. He and Jake shook hands, looking one another over. Jake looked at Dietz a minute. "I knowed we should have telegraphed from Pickle's Gap," he said, then turned with a grin and shook Gus's hand. "You always was a hog, Gus," Jake said. "And you are usually late for meals," Augustus reminded him. Then P.I. insisted on shaking hands, though Jake had never been very partial to him. "By gosh, Jake, you stayed gone a while," P.I. said. While they were shaking, Jake noticed the boy standing there by some light cowhand with a heavy mustache. "My Lord," he said. "Are you little Newt? Well, you're plumb growed. Who let that happen?" Newt felt so full of feeling that he could hardly speak. "It's me, Jake," he said. "I'm still here." "What do you think, Captain?" Dietz asked, handing Call a receipt from the bank. "Did I find the prodigal?" "You found him," Call said. "I bet he wasn't in church either." Dietz had a laugh at that. "No, sir," he said. "Not in church." Jake was introduced to Dish Boget, but once he shook hands, he turned and had another look at Newt, as if the fact that he was nearly grown surprised him more than anything else in Lonesome Dove. "I swear, Jake," Augustus said, looking at the bay horse, "you've rode that horse right down to the bone." "Give him a good feed," Dietz, Call said. "I judge it's been a while since he's had one." Dietz led the horses off toward the roofless barn. It was true that he made his pants out of old quilts for reasons no one could get him to explain. Colorful as they were, quilts weren't the best material for riding through mesquite and chaparral. Thorns had snagged the pants in several places, and the cotton ticking was sticking out. For headgear, Dietz wore an old cavalry cap he'd found somewhere. It was in nearly as bad a shape as Lippy's bowler. "Didn't he have that cap when I left?" Jake asked. He took his own hat off and slapped the dust off his pants leg with it. He had curly black hair, but Newt saw, to his surprise, that there was a sizable bald spot on the top of his head.
"He found that cap in the 50s, to the best of my recollection," Augusta said. "You know, Dietz is like me. He's not one to quit on a garment just because it's got a little age. We can't all be fine dressers like you, Jake."
Jake turned his coffee eyes on Augustus and broke out another slow grin. "What did it take to get you to whip up another batch of them biscuits?" he said. "I've come all the way from Arkansas without tasting a good bite of bread." "From the looks of that pony, it's been fast traveling," Carl said, which was as close to prying as he intended to get. He had run with Jake Spoon off and on for 20 years and liked him well. But the man had always worried him a little underneath. There was no more likable man in the West, and no better rider either, but riding wasn't everything, and neither was likableness. Something in Jake didn't quite stick. Something wasn't quite consistent. He could be the coolest man in the company in one fight, and in the next be practically worthless. Augustus knew it, too. He was a great sponsor of Jake's and had stayed fond of him, although for years they were rivals for Clara Allen, who eventually showed them both the door. But Augustus felt, with Cull, that Jake wasn't long on backbone. When he left the Rangers, Augustus said more than once that he would probably end up hung. So far, that hadn't happened, but riding up at breakfast time on a gaunt horse was an indication of trouble. Jake prided himself on pretty horses, and would never ride a horse as hard as the bay had been ridden if trouble wasn't somewhere behind him. Jake saw Bolivar coming from the old cistern with a bucket full of water. Bolivar was a new face, and one that had no interest in his homecoming. A little cool water sloshed over the edges of the bucket, looking very good to a man with a mouth as dusty as Jake's. "Boys, I'd like a drink and maybe even a wash, if you can spare one," he said. "My luck's been running kind of muddy lately. But I'd like to get water enough in me that I can at least spit before I tell you about it."
"Why, sure," Augustus said. "Go fill a dipper. You want us to stay out here and hold off the posses?"
"There ain't no posses," Jake said, going in the house. Dish Bogut felt somewhat at a loss. He had been all ready to hire on, then this new man rode up, and everyone had sort of forgotten him. Cap'n Call, a man known for being all business, seemed a little distracted. He and Gus just stood there as if they expected a posse, despite what Jake Spoon had said. Newt noticed it, too. Mr. Gus ought to go in and cook Jake some biscuits, but he just stood there, thinking about something, evidently. Dietz was on his way back from the lots. Dish finally spoke up.
"Cap'n, like I said, I'd be glad to wait if you have some plans to make up a herd," he said.
Captain looked at him strangely, as if he might have forgotten his name, much less what he was doing there, but it wasn't the case.
"Why, yes, Dish," he said. "We might be needing some hands if you don't mind doing some well digging while you wait. P, you best get the boys started."
Dish was almost ready to back out then and there. He had drawn top wages for the last 2 years without being asked to do anything that couldn't be done from a horse. It was insensitive of the captain to think that he could just order him off with a boy and an old idiot like P.I. to wrestle a spade and a crowbar all day. It scratched his pride, and he had a notion to go get his horse and let him keep their well digging. But the captain was looking at him hard. When Dish looked up to say he had changed his mind, their eyes met, and Dish didn't say it. There had been no real promises made, much less talk of wages, but somehow Dish had taken one step too far. The captain was looking at him eye to eye, as if to see if he was going to stand by his own words, or if he meant to wiggle like a fish and change his mind. Dish had only offered to stay because of Laurie, but suddenly it had all gotten beyond her. P and Newt were already walking toward the barn. It was clear from the captain's attitude that unless he wanted to lose all reputation, He had trapped himself into at least one day's well digging. It seemed to him he ought to at least say something to salvage a little pride. But before he could think of anything, Gus came over and clapped him on the shoulder.
"You should have rode off last night, Dish," he said with an irritating grin. "You may never see the last of this outfit now."
"Well, you was the one that invited me," Dish said, highly annoyed. Since there was no help for it, short of disgrace, he started for the lots.
"If you come to Chiny, you can stop digging," Augustus called after him. "That's the place where the men wear pigtails."
"I wouldn't ride him if I were you," Call said. "We may need him."
"And I didn't send him off to dig no well. Don't you know that that's an insult to his dignity? I'm surprised he went. Well, I thought Dish had more grit."
"He said he'd stay," Call said. "I ain't feeding him 3 times a day to sit around and play cards with you."
"No need to now," Augustus said. "I got Jake for that. I bet you don't get Jake down in your well."
At that moment, Jake stepped out on the back porch, his sleeves rolled up and his face red from the scrubbing he had given it with an old piece of sacking they used for a towel.
"That old pistolero's been cleaning his gun on this towel," Jake said. "It's filthy dirty." "If it's just his six-shooter he's cleaning on it, you oughtn't to complain," Augustus said. "There's worse things he could wipe on it."
"Hell, don't you men ever wash?" Jake asked. "That old Mex didn't even want to give me a pan of water." It was the kind of remark Call had no patience with, but that was Jake, more interested in fancy arrangements than in the more important matters.
"Once you left, our standards slipped," Augustus said. "The majority of this outfit ain't interested in refinements."
"Well, that's plain," Jake said. "There's a damn pig on the back porch. Now, what about them biscuits?"
"Much as I've missed you, I ain't overworking my sourdough just because you and Dietz couldn't manage to get here in time," Augustus said. "What I will do is fry you some meat."
He fried it. Jake and Dietz ate it, while Bolivar sat in the corner and sulked at the thought of 2 more breakfasts to wash up after. It amused Augustus to watch Jake eat. He was so fastidious about it, but the sight put Call into a black fidget. Jake could spend 20 minutes picking some eggs and a bit of bacon. It was obvious to Augustus that Call was trying to be polite and let Jake get some food in his belly before he told his story. But Call was not a patient man and had already controlled his urge to get to work longer than was usual. He stood in the door watching the whitening sky and looking restless enough to bite himself.
"So where have you been, Jake?" Augustus asked, to speed things up.
Jake looked thoughtful, as he almost always did. His coffee-colored eyes always seemed to be traveling leisurely over scenes from his own past, and they gave the impression that he was a man of sorrows, an impression very appealing to the ladies. It disgusted Augustus a little that the ladies were so taken by Jake's big eyes. In fact, Jake Spoon had had a perfectly easy life, doing mostly just what he pleased and keeping his boots clean. What his big eyes concealed was a slow-working brain. Basically, Jake just dreamed his way through life and somehow got by with it.
"Oh, I've been seeing the country," he said. "I was up to Montana 2 years ago. I guess that's what made me decide to come back, although I've been meaning to get back down this way and see you boys for some years."
Call came back in the room and straddled a chair, figuring he might as well hear it.
"What's Montana got to do with us?" he asked.
"Why, Call, you ought to see it," Jake said. "Prettier country never was."
"Well, how far'd you go?" Augustus asked.
"Way up past the Yellowstone," Jake said. "I was near to the Milk River. You can smell Canada from there."
"I bet you can smell Indians, too," Call said. "How'd you get past the Cheyenne?"
"They ship most of them out," Jake said. "Some of the Blackfeet are still troublesome, but I was with the army doing a little scouting." That hardly made sense. Jake Spoon might scout his way across a card table, but Montana was something else.
"When do you take to scouting?" Call asked dryly.
"Oh, I was just with a feller taking some beef to the Blackfeet," Jake said. "The army came along to help."
A lot of damn help the army would be driving beef, Gus said.
Well, they helped us keep our hair, Jake said, laying his knife and fork across his plate as neatly as if he were eating at a fancy table.
My main job was to scare the buffalo out of the way, he said. Buffalo, Augustus said. I thought they was about all gone.
Pshaw, Jake said. I must have seen 50,000 above the Yellowstone. The damn buffalo hunters ain't got the guts to take on them Indians. Oh, they'll finish 'em once the Cheyenne and the Sioux finally cave in. And they may have since I left. The damn Indians have the grass of Montana all to themselves. And it has got grass. Call, you ought to see it.
I'd go today if I could fly, Call said. Be safer to walk, Augustus said. By the time we walked up there, maybe they would have licked the Indians.
That's just it, boys, Jake said. The minute they're licked, there's going to be fortunes made in Montana. Why, it's cattle land like you've never seen it, Call. High grass and plenty of water.
Chilly, though, ain't it? Augustus asked.
Oh, it's got weather, Jake said. Hell, a man can wear a coat.
Better yet, a man can stay inside, Augustus said.
Well, I've yet to see a fortune made inside, Call said, except by a banker, and we ain't bankers.
What did you have in mind, Jake?
Getting to it first, Jake said. Round up some of these free cattle and take 'em on up. Beat all the other sons of bitches, and we'd soon be rich.
Augustus and Call exchanged looks.
It was odd talk to be hearing from Jake Spoon, who had never been known for his ambition, much less his fondness for cows. Pretty whores and pacing horses, and lots of clean shirts had been his main requirements in life.
Why, Jake, what reformed you? Gus asked. You was never a man to hanker after fortune.
Living with cows from here to Montana would mean a change in your habits. If I remember 'em right, Call said. Jake grinned his slow grin. You boys, he said. You got me down for lazier than I am. I ain't no lover of cow shit and trail dust, I admit, but I've seen something that you haven't seen. Montana. Just because I like to play cards don't mean I can't smell an opportunity when one's right under my nose. Well, you boys ain't even got a barn with a roof on it. I doubt it would bust you to move.
Jake, if you ain't something, Augustus said. Here we ain't seen hiding or hair of you for 10 years, and now you come riding in and want us to pack up and go north and get scalped?
Well, Gus, me and Call are going bald anyway, Jake said. You're the only one whose hair they'd want.
All the more reason not to carry it into a hostile land, Augustus said. Why don't you just calm down and play cards with me for a few days? Then when I've won all your money, we'll talk about going places.
Jake whittled down a match and began to meticulously pick his teeth. By the time you clean me, Montana will be all settled up, he said. I don't clean quick.
What about that horse, Call asked.
You didn't gan him like that just so you could get here to help us beat the rush to Montana. What's this about your luck running thick?
Jake looked a little more sorrowful as he picked his teeth.
Killed the dentist, he said. Pure accident, but I killed him.
Where'd this happen? Call asked.
Fort Smith, Arkansas, Jake said. Not 3 weeks ago.
Well, I've always considered dentistry a dangerous profession, Augustus said. Making a living by yanking people's teeth out is asking for trouble.
He wasn't even pulling my tooth, Jake said. I didn't even know there was a dentist in town. I got in a little argument in a saloon, and a damn mule skinner threw down on me. Somebody's old buffalo rifle was leaning against the wall right by me, and that's what I went for. Hell, I was sitting on my own pistol. I never would have got to it in time. I wasn't even playing cards with a mule skinner.
What riled him then? Gus asked.
Whiskey, Jake said. He was bull drunk before I even noticed he took a dislike to my dress and pulled his colt.
Well, I don't know what took you to Arkansas in the first place, Jake, Augustus said. Fancy dresser like yourself is bound to excite comment in them parts.
Call had found over the years that it only did to believe half of what Jake said. Jake was not a ball liar, but once he thought over a scrape, his imagination sort of worked on it and shaded it in his own favor. If a man pointed a gun at you and you shot him, then that was self-defense, Call said. I still don't see where the dentist comes in. That was bad luck all around, Jake said. I never even shot the mule skinner. I did shoot, but I missed, which was enough to scare him off. But of course I shot that darn buffalo gun, and it was just a little plank saloon we were sitting in. And plank won't stop a 50 caliber bullet. Hey, they're well a dentist, Augustus observed. Not unless you shoot down on him from the top, and even then I expect the bullet had come out his foot. Call shook his head. Augustus could think of the damnedest things. So where was the dentist, he asked. Walking along the other side of the street, Jake said. They got big wide streets in that town, too. But not wide enough, I guess, Call said. Nope, Jake said. We went to the door to watch the mule skinner run off and saw the dentist laying over there dead 50 yards away. He had managed to get in the exact wrong spot. P done the same thing once, Augustus said. You remember Woodrow? Up in the Wichita country? P shot at a wolf and missed, and the bullet went over a hill and killed one of our horses. I won't forget that, Call said. It was little Billy it killed. I hated to lose that horse. Of course, we couldn't convince P he'd done it, Augustus said. He don't understand trajectory. Well, I understand it, Jake said. Everybody in town liked that dentist. Oh, Jake, that won't stick, Augustus said. Nobody really likes dentists. Well, this one was the mayor, Jake said. Well, it was an accidental death, Call said. Yeah, but I'm just a gambler. They all like to think that they're respectable back in Arkansas. Besides, the dentist's brother was the sheriff, and somebody told him I was a gunfighter. He invited me to leave town the week before it happened. Call sighed. All the gunfighter business went back to one lucky shot Jake had made when he was a mere boy starting out in the Rangers. It was funny how one shot could make a man's reputation like that. It was a hip shot Jake made because he was scared, and it killed a Mexican bandit who was riding toward him on a dead run. It was Call's opinion, and Augustus's too, that Jake hadn't even been shooting at the bandit. It was probably shooting in hopes of bringing down the horse, which might have fallen on the bandit and crippled him a little, but Jake shot blind from the hip, with the sun in his eyes to boot, and hit that bandit right in the Adam's apple, a thing not likely to occur more than once in a lifetime, if that often. But it was Jake's luck that most of the men who saw him make the shot were raw boys, too, with not enough judgment to appreciate how lucky a thing it was. Those that survived and grew up told the story all across the West, so there was hardly a man from the Mexican border to Canada who hadn't heard what a dead pistol shot Jake Spoon was, though any man who had fought with him through the years would know that he was no shot at all with a pistol and only a fair shot with a rifle. Call and Augustus had always worried about Jake because of his unearned reputation, but he was a lucky fellow, and there were not many men around dumb enough to enjoy pistol fights, so Jake managed to get by. It was ironic that the shot which finally got him in trouble was as big an accident as the shot that made his fame. "How'd you get loose from the sheriff?" Call asked. "He was gone when it happened," Jake said. "He was up in Missouri testifying on some stage robbers. I don't know if he's even back in Fort Smith yet." "They wouldn't have hung you for an accident, even in Arkansas," Call said. "I am a gambler, but that's one I didn't figure to gamble on," Jake said. "I just went out the back door and left, hoping July would get too busy to come after me." "July is the sheriff?" Augustus asked. "Yes, July Johnson," Jake said. "He's young, but he's determined. I hope he gets busy." "I don't know why a lawman would want a dentist for a brother," Augustus said rather absently. "Well, if he warned you out of town, you should have left," Call said. "There's plenty of other towns besides Fort Smith." "Jake probably had him a whore," Augustus said. "He usually does." "You're one to talk," Jake said. They all fell silent for a time while Jake thoughtfully picked his teeth with the sharpened match. Bolivar was sound asleep, sitting on a stool. "I should have rode on, Call," Jake said apologetically. "But Fort Smith's a pretty town. It's on the river, and I like to have a river running by me. They eat catfish down there. I got to where it kind of suited my tooth." "I'd like to see the fish could keep me in a place I wasn't wanted," Call said. Jake had always been handy with excuses.
That's what we'll tell the sheriff when he shows up to take you back, Augusta said. Maybe he'll take you fishing while you're waiting to be hung.
Jake let it pass. Gus would have his joke, and he and Call would disapprove of him when he got in some unlucky scrape. It had always been that way. But the three of them were compañero still, no matter how many dentists he killed. Call and Gus had been the law themselves and didn't always bow and scrape to it. They would not likely let some young sheriff take him off to hang just because of an accident. He was willing to take a bit of ribbing. When trouble came, if it did, the boys would stick and July Johnson would have to ride back home empty-handed. He stood up and walked to the door to look over the hot, dusty little town.
I hardly thought to find you boys still here, he said. I thought you'd have some big ranch somewheres by now. This town was a two-bit town when we came here, and it looks to me like it's lost about 15 cents since then. Who's left that we all know?
Xavier and Lippy, Augusta said.
Trace got killed, thank God. Few of the boys are left, but I forgot who. Tom Bynum's left.
He would be, Jake said. The Lord looks after fools like Tom.
What do you hear, Clara?
Augustus asked.
I suppose since you've traveled the world, you've been to see her. Dropped in for supper, innocent-like, I guess.
Call stood up to go. He had heard enough to know why Jake had come back. He didn't intend to waste the day listening to him jaw about his travels, particularly not if it meant having to hear any talk about Clara Allen. He had heard enough about Clara in the old days when Gus and Jake had both been courting her. He had been quite happy to think it all ended when she married, but it hadn't ended, and listening to Gus pine over her was almost as bad as having him and Jake fighting about her. Now, with Jake back, it would all start again, though Clara Allen had been married and gone for over 15 years. Dietz stood up when Call did, ready for work. He hadn't said a word while eating, but it was clear that he took much pride in being the one who had seen Jake first.
Well, it ain't a holiday, Call said. Work to do. Me and Dietz will go see if we can help them boys.
That newt surprised me, Jake said. I had it in mind that he was still a spud. Is Maggie still here?
Maggie's been dead for 9 years, Augustus said. You wasn't hardly over the hill when it happened.
I swear, Jake said. You mean you've had little Newt for 9 years? There was a long silence in which only Augustus felt comfortable. Dietz felt so uncomfortable that he stepped in front of the captain and went out the door.
Why, yes, Jake. We've had him since Maggie died.
I swear, Jake said again.
It was the only Christian thing. Taking him in, I mean. After all, one of you boys is more than likely his pa.
Call put on his hat, picked up his rifle, and left them to their talk.
Chapter 7
Jake Spoon stood in the door of the low house, watching Call and Dietz head for the barn. He had been looking forward to being home from the moment he looked out the door of the saloon and saw the dead man lying in the mud across the wide main street of Fort Smith. But now that he was home, it came back to him how nervous things could be if Call wasn't in his best mood. Dietz's pants are a sight, ain't they? He said mildly. Seems to me he used to dress better. Augustus chuckled.
He used to dress worse. Why, he had that sheepskin coat for 15 years. You couldn't get in 5 feet of him without the lice jumping on you. It was because of that coat that we made him sleep in the barn. I ain't finicky except when it comes to lice.
What happened to it? Jake asked.
I burned it. Done it one summer when Dietz was off on a trip with Call. I told him a buffalo hunter stole it. Dietz was ready to track him and get his coat back, but I talked him out of it.
Well, it was his coat, Jake said. I don't blame him.
Hell, Dietz didn't need it. It ain't cold down here. Dietz was just attached to it because he had it so long. You remember when we found it, don't you? You was along.
I may have been along, but I don't remember, Jake said, lighting a smoke.
We found that coat in an abandoned cabin up on the Brazos. I guess the settlers that run out decided it was too heavy to carry. It weighed as much as a good-sized sheep, which is why Call gave it to Dietz. He was the only one of us stout enough to carry it all day. Don't you remember that, Jake? It was that time we had that scrape up by Fort Phantom Hill.
I remember a scrape, but the rest is kind of cloudy, Jake said. I guess all you boys have got to do is sit around and talk about old times. I'm young yet, Gus. I got a living to make. In fact, what he did remember was being scared every time they crossed the Brazos, since it would just be 10 or 12 of them, and no reason not to think that they would run into 100 Comanches or Kiowas. He would have been glad to quit rangering if he could have thought of a way to do it that wouldn't look bad, but there was no way. In the end, he came through 12 Indian fights and many scrapes with bandits, only to get in real trouble in Fort Smith, Arkansas, as safe a town as you could find. Now that he had come back, it was just to be reminded of Maggie, who had always threatened to die if he ever left her. Of course, he had thought it was just girlish talk, the kind of thing all women said when they were trying to hold a fella. Jake had heard such talk all the way up the trail, in San Antonio and Fort Worth, Abilene, Dodge, Ogallala, and Miles City, the talk of whores pretending to be in love for one. But Maggie had actually died, when he had only supposed that she would just move on to another town. It was a sad memory to come home to, though from what he knew of the situation, Call had done her even worse than he had.
"Jake, I noticed that you have not answered me about Clara. If you've been to see her, I would like to hear about it, even though I begrudge you every minute."
"Oh, you ain't got much begrudging to do," Jake said. "I just seen her for a minute, outside a store in Ogallala. That dern Bob was with her, so all I could do was tip my hat and say good morning."
"I swear, Jake, I thought you'd have more gumption than that. They live up in Nebraska, do they?"
"Yes, on the North Platte," Jake said. "Why, he's the biggest horse trader in the territory. The army gets most of its horses from him, what army's in those parts. And the army wears out a lot of horses. I reckon he's close to rich."
"Any young'uns?"
"Two girls, I believe," Jake said. "I heard her boys died. Bob wasn't too friendly. I wasn't asked to supper."
"Even old dumb Bob's got enough sense to keep the likes of you away from Clara. How did she look?"
"Clara?" Jake said. "Not as pretty as she once was."
"I guess it's a hard life in Nebraska," Augusta said.
After that, neither of them had any more to say for a few minutes. Jake thought it ill-spoken of Gus to bring Clara up, a woman he no longer had any sympathy for since she had shown him the door and married a big dumb horse trader from Kentucky. Even losing her to Gus wouldn't have been so bitter a blow, since Gus had been her beau before he met her. Augustus felt his own pangs, irked mainly, that Jake had had a glimpse of Clara, whereas he himself had to make do with an occasional scrap of gossip. At 16, she had been so pretty it took your breath, and smart, too. A girl with some sand, as she had quickly shown when both her parents had been killed in the big Indian raid of 56, the worst ever to rake that part of the country. Clara had been in school in San Antonio when it happened, but she came right back to Austin and ran the store her parents had started. The Indians had tried to set fire to it, but for some reason it didn't catch. Augustus felt that he might have won her that year, but as luck would have it, he was married then to his second wife, and by the time she died, Clara had developed such an independent mind that winning her was no longer an easy thing. In fact, it proved an impossible thing. She wouldn't have him, or Jake either. And yet she married Bob Allen, a man so dumb he could hardly walk through a door without bumping his head. They soon went north. Since then, Augustus had kept his ears open for news that she was widowed. He didn't wish Clara any unpleasantness, but horse trading in Indian country was risky business. If Bob should meet an untimely end, as better men had, then he wanted to be the first to offer his assistance to the widow.
"That Bob Allen's lucky," he remarked. "I've known horse traders that didn't last a year."
"Why, hell, you're a horse trader yourself," Jake said. "You boys have let yourselves get stuck. You should have gone up north a long time ago. There's plenty of opportunity left up north."
"Well, that may be, Jake, but all you've done with it is kill a dentist. At least we ain't committed no ridiculous crime."
Jake smiled. "You got anything to drink around here?" he asked. "Or do you just sit around all day with your throat parched?" "He gets drunk," Bolivar said, waking up suddenly. Augusta stood up.
"Let's go for a stroll. This man don't like folks idling in his kitchen after a certain hour. They walked out into the hot morning. The sky was already white. Bolivar followed them out, picking up a rawhide lariat that he kept on a pile of firewood back by the porch. They watched him walk off into the chaparral, the rope in his hand. That old pistolero ain't very polite, Jake said. Where's he going with that rope?
I didn't ask him, Gus said.
He went around to the spring house, which was empty of rattlesnakes for once. It amused him to think how annoyed Call would be when he came up at noon and found them both drunk. He handed Jake the jug, since he was the guest. Jake uncorked it and took a modest swig. Now, if we had some shade to drink this in, we'd be in good shape, Jake said. I don't suppose there's a sporting woman in this town, is there?
You are a scamp, Augusta said, taking the jug. Are you so rich that's all you can think about?
I can think about it, rich or poor, Jake said. They squatted in the shade of the spring house for a bit, their backs against the adobe, which was still cool on the side the sun hadn't struck. Augusta saw no need to mention Lorena, since he knew that Jake would soon discover her for himself, and probably have her in love with him within the week. The thought of Dish Boget's bad timing made him smile, for it was certain Jake's return would doom whatever chance Dish might have had. Dish had committed himself to a day of well-digging for nothing, for when it came to getting women in love with him, Jake Spoon had no equal. His big eyes convinced him that he'd be lost without him, and none of them seemed to want him just to go on and be lost. While they were squatting by the spring house, the pigs came nosing around the house looking for something to eat, but there wasn't so much as a grasshopper in the yard. They stopped and looked at Augustus for a minute.
Get on down to the saloon. Maybe you find Lippy's hat.
Folks that keep pigs ain't no better than farmers, Jake said. I'm surprised at you and Call. If you gave up being lawmen, I thought you'd at least stay cattlemen.
Well, I thought you'd own a railroad by now, for that matter. Or a whorehouse, at least. I guess life's been a disappointment to us both.
Well, I may not have a fortune, but I've never said a word to a pig, either, Jake said. Now that he was home and back with friends, he was beginning to feel sleepy. After a few more swigs and a little more argument, he stretched out as close to the spring house as he could get, so as to have shade for as long as possible. He raised up on an elbow to have one more go at the jug. "How come Call lets you sit around and guzzle this mash all day?" he asked.
"Call ain't never been my boss. It's no say-so of his when I drink."
Jake looked off across the scrubby pastures. There were tufts of grass here and there, but mostly the ground looked hard as flint. Heat waves were rising off it like fumes off kerosene. Something moved in his line of vision, and for a moment he thought he saw some strange brown animal under a chaparral bush. Looking more closely, he saw that it was the old Mexican's bare backside.
"Hell, why'd he take a rope if all he meant to do was shit?" he asked. "Where'd you get that greasy old bastard?" "We're running a charitable home for retired criminals," Augusta said. "If you'd just retire, you'd qualify."
"Darn, I forgot how ugly this country is," Jake said. "I guess if there was a market for snake meat, this would be the place to get rich." With that, he put his hat over his face, and within no more than 2 minutes began a gentle snoring. Augustus returned the jug to the spring house. It occurred to him that while Jake was napping, he might pay a visit to Lori. Once she fell under Jake's spell, he would probably require her to suspend professional activities for a while. Augustus viewed this prospect philosophically. It was his experience that a man's dealings with women were invariably prone to interruptions, often of a more lasting nature than Jake Spoon was apt to prompt. He left Jake sleeping and strolled down the middle of Hat Creek. As he passed the corrals, he saw Dish straining at the windlass to bring up a bucket of dirt out of the new well. Call was in the lot, working with the hell bitch. He had her snubbed to a post and was fanning her with a saddle blanket. Dish was as wet with sweat as if he'd crawled out of a horse trough. He'd sweated through the hat band of his hat, even sweated through his belt.
"Dish, you plumb wet," Augusta said. "If there was a well there, I'd figured you fell in." "If folks could drink sweat, you wouldn't need no well," Dish said. It seemed to Augustus that his tone was a shade unfriendly. Look at it this way, Dish, Augustus said. You're storing up manna in heaven working like this.
Heaven be damned, Dish said. Augustus smiled.
Why, the Bible just asked for the sweat of your brow. You're even sweating from the belt buckle, Dish. That ought to put you in good with a seraphim.
The reference was lost on Dish, who bitterly regretted his foolishness in allowing himself to be drawn into such undignified work. Augustus stood there grinning at him as if the sight of a man sweating was the most amusing thing in the world.
I ought to kick you down this hole, Dish said. If you hadn't loaned me that money, I'd be halfway to Matagorda by now.
Augustus walked over to the fence to watch Call work the mare. He was about to throw the saddle on her. He had her snubbed close, but she still had her eye turned so she could watch him in case he got careless.
You ought to blindfold her. I thought you knowed that much.
I don't want her blindfolded, Call said.
If she was blindfolded, she might bite the post next time instead of you.
Call got her to accept the blanket and picked up his saddle. Snubbed as she was, she couldn't bite him, but her hind legs weren't snubbed. He kept close to her shoulder as he prepared to ease on the saddle. The mare let go with her near hind foot. It didn't get him, but it got the saddle and nearly knocked it out of his hand. He kept close to her shoulder and got the saddle in position again.
Remember that horse that bit off all of that old boy's toes? All the ones on the left foot, I mean, Augustus said. That old boy's name was Harwell. He went to the war and got killed at Vicksburg. He never was much of a hand after he lost his toes. Of course, the horse that bit him off had a head the size of a pumpkin. I don't suppose a little mare like that would take off 5 toes in 1 bite.
Call eased the saddle on her, and the minute the stirrup slapped against her belly, the mare went as high as she could get, and the saddle flew off and landed 20 feet away. Augustus got a big laugh out of it. Call went to the barn and returned with a short rawhide rope.
If you want me to help, just ask me, Augustus said.
I don't, Call said. Not from you.
Call, you ain't never learned. There's plenty of gentle horses in this world. Why would a man with your responsibilities want to waste time with a filly that's got to be hobbled and blindfolded before you can even keep a saddle on her?
Call ignored him. In a moment, the mare tentatively lifted her near hind foot with the thought of kicking whatever might be in range. When she did, he caught the foot with a rawhide rope and took a hitch around the snubbing post. It left the mare standing on 3 legs so she could not kick again without throwing herself. She watched him out of the corner of her eye, trembling a little with indignation, but she accepted the saddle.
Why don't you trade her to Jake, Augustus said. If they don't hang him, maybe he could teach her to pace.
Call left the mare saddled, snubbed, and on 3 legs, and came to the fence to have a smoke and let the mare have a moment to consider the situation. Where's Jake, he asked.
Catching a nap, Augustus said. I reckon the anxiety wore him out.
He ain't changed a bit, Call said. Not a darn bit. Augustus laughed.
You're the one to talk. When's the last time you changed? It must have been before we met, and that was 30 years ago.
Look at her watch us, Call said. The mare was watching them, even had her ears pointed at him.
I wouldn't take it as no compliment, Augustus said. She ain't watching you because she loves you.
Say what you will, Call said. I never seen a more intelligent filly. Augustus laughed again.
Oh, that's what you look for, is it? Intelligence. You and me's got opposite ideas about things. It's intelligent creatures you got to watch out for. See, I don't care if they're horses or women or Indians or what. I learned a long time ago there's much to be said for dumbness. A dumb horse may step in a hole once in a while, but at least you can turn your back on one without losing a patch of your hide.
I'd rather my horses didn't step in no holes, Call said. You reckon somebody's really on Jake's trail?
Hard to judge. Jake was always nervous. He's seen more Indians that turned out to be sage bushes than any man I know.
Yeah, dead Dennis ain't a sagebrush, Call said.
Now, in that case, it's the sheriff that's the unknown factor, Gus said. Maybe he didn't like his brother. Maybe some outlaw will shoot him before he can come after Jake. Maybe he'll get lost and end up in Washington, D.C., or maybe he'll show up tomorrow and whip us all. I wouldn't lay money.
They fell silent for a moment. The only sound, the grinding of the windlass as Dish drew up another bucket of dirt.
Why not go north? Call said, taking Augustus by surprise.
Why, I don't know. I've never given the matter no thought. So far as I know, you haven't either. I do think we're a shade old to do much Indian fighting.
There won't be much, Call said. You heard Jake. It's the same up there as it is down here. Indians will soon be whipped. And Jake does no good country when he sees it. Sounds like a cattleman's paradise.
No, it sounds like a goddamn wilderness, Augustus said. Why, there ain't even a house to go to. I've slept on the ground enough for one life. Now I'm in the mood for a little civilization. I don't have to have operas and streetcars, but I do enjoy a decent bed and a roof to keep out the weather.
He said there was fortunes to be made, Call said. Stands to reason he's right. Somebody's gonna settle it up and get that land. Suppose we got there first. We could buy you 40 beds.
The surprising thing to Augustus was not just what Call was suggesting, but how he sounded. For years, Call had looked at life as if it were essentially over. Call had never been a man who could think of much reason for acting happy. But then he had always been one who knew his purpose. His purpose was to get done what needed to be done. And what needed to be done was simple, if not easy. The settlers of Texas needed protection from the Indians on the north and the bandits on the south. As a ranger, Call had had a job that fit him, and he had gone about the work with a vigor that would have passed for happiness in another man. But the job wore out, and in the south it became mainly a matter of protecting the cattle herds of rich men like Captain King or Shanghai Pierce, both of whom had more cattle than any one man needed. In the north, the army had finally taken the fight against the Comanches away from the rangers, and had nearly finished it. He and Call, who had no military rank or standing, weren't welcomed by the army. With forts all across the northwestern frontier, the free-roving rangers found that they were always interfering with the army, or else being interfered with. When the Civil War came, the governor himself called them in and asked them not to go. With so many men gone, they needed at least one reliable troop of rangers to keep the peace on the border. It was that assignment that brought them to Lonesome Dove. After the war, the cattle market came into existence, and all the big landowners in South Texas began to make up herds and trail them north to the Kansas railheads. Once cattle became the game and the brush country filled up with cowboys and cattle traders, he and Call finally stopped rangering. It was no trouble for them to cross the river and bring back a few hundred head at a time to sell to the traders who were too lazy to go into Mexico themselves. They prospered in a small way. There was enough money in their account in San Antonio that they could have considered themselves rich had that notion interested them. But it didn't. Augustus knew that nothing about the life they were living interested Call particularly. They had enough money that they could have bought land, but they hadn't, although plenty of land could still be had wonderfully cheap. It was that they had roved too long, Augustus concluded when his mind turned to such matters. They were people of the horse, not of the town, and that they were more like the Comanches than Call would have ever admitted. They had been in Lonesome Dove nearly 10 years, and yet what little property they had acquired was so worthless that neither of them would have felt bad about just saddling up and riding off from it. Indeed, it seemed to Augustus that that was what both of them had always expected would happen. They were not out of the settled fraternity, he and Call. From time to time, they talked of going west of the Pecos, perhaps rangering out there, but so far only the rare settler had cared to challenge the Apache, so there was no need for rangers. Augustus had not expected that Call would be satisfied just to rustle Mexican cattle forever, but neither had he expected him to suddenly decide to strike out for Montana. Yet it was obvious the idea had taken hold of the man.
"I'll tell you what, Call," Augustus said. "You and Dietz and P go on up there to Montana and build a nice snug cabin with a good fireplace and at least one bed, so it'll be waiting when I get there. then clear out the last of the Cheyenne and the Blackfeet and any Sioux that look rambunctious. When you done that, me and Jake and Nude'll gather up a herd and meet you on the Powder River.
Call looked almost amused. I'd like to see the herd that you and Jake could get there with, he said. Herd of horses.